This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Michael Enright. Each week, the Sunday edition sets out to disrupt your morning routine with argument, with ideas, with challenging guests you won't meet anywhere else on the dial. The Sunday edition, 9/11, 9/41 in Newfoundland, here on CBC Radio 1.
I'm Maureen Taylor, and you're listening to the Friday edition of The Current. This morning, Mark Carney, a 42-year-old former investment banker, took over as the governor of the Bank of Canada, the top economic job in the country. Mr. Carney is one of the youngest and least experienced central bankers in the developed world. His admirers say he's a genius with a bold plan to remake the bank and stabilize the Canadian economy. Skeptics worry he's in over his head. Either way, he's facing some daunting challenges, the biggest of them being how to keep the Canadian economy in the black while the U.S. economy threatens to fall into recession. When he arrived in Ottawa 4 short years ago, Mark Carney was largely unknown, even inside the finance department. But he has built a powerful fan base. One of those includes Finance Minister Jim Flaherty.
I think he'll bring to the new job a strong sense of professionalism, a lot of experience in the private sector and the capital markets, and a substantial experience in the public sector, certainly with the Department of Finance and internationally. He's well known by other central bankers and other ministers of finance. I've been with him at those meetings around the world, well respected, which will be a great assistance to Canada in our global role. He's got the right experience, he's got the right attitude, he's got the right sense of public service.
That was Finance Minister Jim Flaherty. Mark Carney also impressed former Liberal Finance Minister Ralph Goodale when he worked for Mr. Goodale as Senior Associate Deputy Minister of Finance. Here's how Mr. Goodale remembers him.
Well, obviously very bright, somebody who was a very quick study on some of the most complicated issues that we had to deal with. The sale of Petro-Canada, which was criticized by some of the pundits at the time or in advance, but the methodology that was chosen and implemented by Mark and the advice that I was happy to take from him on how to conduct this sale resulted in the single most successful transaction of its kind in Canadian history. He will be a very strong and well-regarded governor of the bank, both domestically and internationally. He has a very strong capacity to innovate in a constructive way, not any kind of reckless or careless way, but when he's faced with some knotty problems that have been around for a while, he will be very creative in approaching issues at the central bank, but at the same time, rock solid on the fundamentals.
That was former Liberal Finance Minister Ralph Goodale on his working relationship with Mark Carney, the new governor of the Bank of Canada. To get a sense of who Mark Carney is and how he's managed to impress so many powerful people in such a short time, I'm joined now by the Globe and Mail's economics reporter Heather Scawfield. She has profiled Mark Carney recently. She's in Ottawa and joins us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Maureen.
Now, you, like us, never actually got to interview Mark Carney for your profile, but you did speak to a lot of people about him. What have you been told about the kind of person that he is?
And just to be clear, too, I've known Mark Carney for a few years in the course of my coverage. Talking to his friends and his colleagues, he's, by all accounts, a very smart person. He knows a lot about financial markets. He knows a lot about economics. And he's bringing together that package at a time when the government feels that that's what it needs, especially when financial markets are so complicated these days.
Now, I'm from a small town, but he's from a really small town.
Yes. He was born in the Northwest Territories, but he didn't live there for very long. He moved to Edmonton, I think, when he was about six and grew up there, and then went on to Harvard and then to Oxford and spent some, he went from one big city to the next after that, London, Tokyo, New York, and then Toronto.
And his siblings all went to Harvard as well. It must be an amazing family.
His sister didn't go there, but his two brothers went there. Yeah, they all ended up at Goldman Sachs at one point too, in investment banking of some type or another.
Now, talk about Goldman Sachs for those who don't know. What does it mean to be taken into that firm as an investment banker?
Well, when Mark Carney started out there in the 1980s, and his brothers as well, it wasn't the huge firm that it is now. I mean, it's just this massive investment firm that does all kinds of trading and privatizing and floating of bond issues and all sorts of stuff. I I mean, it's this huge financial machine. But in the 80s, it was a bit smaller. It was a very exciting time to get into investment banking at that time.
How well did he do there?
Oh, he did amazingly well. I mean, he went there after he was at Harvard, I believe, and then decided to go back to school. But they came knocking when he was finishing up his PhD at Oxford. They wanted him back, and they lured him back with a great job to get into to emerging markets. And so, he did very well there. So that was always a little bit of a, I guess that's one of the biggest questions about Mark Carney now that he is here in Ottawa, is like, why would you leave such a huge firm where you're obviously making tons of money and you could make millions more? I mean, some of those people are making millions and millions every single year. Why would you do that? Why would you give all that up to come to sleepy old Ottawa where he's making $400,000. It's not bad. But
I guess he points that out to people often, too, how much he gave up money-wise to come to Ottawa.
Yeah, I mean, it's an obvious question, I think, that people want to ask him as soon as, why?
Well,
I mean, power, money, and all those things. So,
what's the answer, Heather?
I look to his thesis, actually, for that answer. His thesis at Oxford was about how does a country become internationally competitive, and how does it find companies that can become that can make a country look really good in a globalized economy. And, he looked at ways to do that. And then he went on to actually do that, to make companies globally competitive. But I think at heart, he's an intellectual. He wants to, take that to the next level and not just make a company internationally competitive, but take a country and make it internationally competitive. So it's an intellectual challenge for him.
Well, what kind of direction do you think he will take the Bank of Canada?
That's hard to say in one way. I mean, now he wants to modernize it. He wants to, one of the first things he's going to do is bring BlackBerries to the Bank of Canada. And I mean, that's just a little thing, but I think it kind of talks to us about the culture there. I mean, it's a very, very conservative place. I think he brings this whole financial markets insight. So he's going to be putting the bank more in touch with financial markets and paying more attention to how financial markets interact with the economy. He's got to look at the inflation target and make sure that that's the right thing to keep guiding the bank from here on in, to see if it needs any kind of adjusting. And I think he's also going to be looking at how the government and the bank and regulators, it's kind of all over the place how they look at financial institutions, and maybe how that could be brought to a little bit more streamlined to make sure financial institutions are truly well-regulated and on a steady base.
What kind of splash did his appointment make when they announced he was going to be the next head of the Bank of Canada?
It made quite a splash. He was in the running all along, and I think most people who watch these things closely knew that. But the front runner, in public opinion, wasn't him. It was the senior deputy governor, Paul Jenkins, mainly because he was the really safe choice, and we kind of thought that with a minority government, they would choose somebody who was safe. And also because Mark Carney was so close to Jim Flaherty that we didn't think that Mr. Flaherty would want to give him up. But again, the government, I think, is in a mind frame where it does actually want to take people by surprise and show that it is, it's modern and that it's thinking, and that, putting a young face in there could actually make it look good.
And what about David Dodge? How does he feel about Mark Carney?
I think Mr. Dodge is very happy about handing over the reins of the bank to Mark Carney. I mean, he hired Mark Carney to begin with. He helped shape him for this job. That he's mentored him for the last 4 years. And I think he's quite... Mr. Dodge started getting into the whole paying more attention to financial markets thing himself a few years ago, and I think he's quite happy to see the bank in the hands of somebody that has such an intricate knowledge of that area.
And just finally, in your profile, Heather, you say that Mark Carney likes to say that Canada can succeed when it has well-researched, well-thought-out positions. What does that say about the way he'll handle this job?
I think that says a lot about it. I mean, that's about the way he thinks. He does a lot of research. He's really a quick study. and that the research and the theory and the fundamentals form a base of how he forms his opinions. And I guess he feels that, if you have all the facts and if you think through it very clearly and have a logical approach, then your arguments will carry weight, whether they be domestically or internationally, that if you have infallible logic, that nobody can argue with you.
All right, Heather, good to talk to you. Thanks for this.
Okay, thanks.
Heather Scofield is the Globe and Mail's economics reporter, and she's in Ottawa. Well, with new leadership come new ideas and new directions. For their thoughts on what Mark Carney might have in mind for Canada's economic future, I'm joined by two people. Jim Stanford is an economist with the Canadian Auto Workers Union. He's here in Toronto. And Chris Reagan is a former advisor to the former Bank of Canada Governor David Dodge. He's now an economics professor at McGill University in Montreal. Good morning to both of you.
Morning, Maureen.
Good morning.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Jim.
Now, Mark Carney has said he wants to modernize this state-old institution, being the Bank of Canada, bring it into the 21st century. Chris Reagan, you have experience with that bank. Is there a need for this institution to be modernized?
Well, it's interesting. I guess it depends on what it means to be modern or modernized.
Is it more than about BlackBerries?
Well,
I hope so.
Yeah,
BlackBerries are going to save the day, we're in trouble, man.
I'm actually not a BlackBerry owner, and... I'm actually hoping to retire without one. I spent a year at the bank in 2004-2005. The impression I get when I spend time at the bank is not that it is not modern in any sense. It is a conservative institution, as Heather Scofield mentioned, and I actually think central banks ought to be conservative institutions. They've got to focus on really some very fundamental things. So I don't think you want a lack of small-c conservative behavior there. I'm not suggesting close-mindedness. But so I don't get the sense that the bank is distinctly unmodern. I do think, though, that it's true, as Heather said, that Mark Carney has unusual experience for macroeconomists. Most macroeconomists do not know as much as Mark does about the operation of financial markets.
Mm-hmm.
And he has spent a long time thinking about and behaving in financial markets. And he is going to clearly bring some of that knowledge to the bank. And I think that's a good thing. I think this is something that just wasn't emphasized enough at the bank, and if his presence there is going to emphasize that side of things, I think that's all to the good.
All right, Jim Stanford, what about the whole modernization, updating Bank of Canada thing? What do you think?
Well, I tend to think that's a bit of a media hook maybe to say we're going to modernize the
right bank.
I'm with Chris. I don't think the bank is unmodern. I agree that Mark does have this incredible experience in financial markets, which will probably help. I mean, this is a pretty interesting time to begin to be a central banker, let me tell you. I think it's like being appointed chief of police the night before Halloween or something like that.
Yeah.
It's your first day on the job and you know full well hell's going to break loose, right? So I think his experience there will probably be helpful. I hope it doesn't sort of direct his thinking in a certain way, because remember, he has to be the central banker for the whole country, not just for the financial investors and the financial firms that are in chaos these days. And I think that means he's got to keep his eye on a broader perspective, not just so-called financial stability, which usually in a central bank world means, stable profits and continued operation by these huge private financial institutions. There's a lot of other things that go on in the economy that he has to keep his eye on as well. So he's clearly very talented. He makes me feel like an underachiever. Of the old age of 46, I've never been made it that far yet. So he's clearly got some talent. I think he's a bit of an unknown commodity in terms of where he's going to go policy-wise.
Interesting. Unknown. Chris Reagan, do you have any ideas of where he'll go?
Well, no, I guess. I mean, I think the truth is we'll see where he goes when he goes there. And maybe we should have a conversation 6 months from now or a year from now, and we'll look back and see where he has gone. I mean, I think he has some clear challenges. I like Jim's analogy to becoming police chief just before Halloween. I mean, there's no question that he is coming in the job at a time when there are some challenges. Not only does it appear that the economy is slowing and driven by, among other things, a U.S. slowing and possibly a recession. I mean, that's challenging. Added on that is what's been going on in financial markets over the past 6 months. That doesn't always happen in a slowdown or a recession, so that's an added twist to this. The slowdown and the recession is kind of standard fare. I don't mean to suggest it's unserious, but it's kind of standard fare for what goes on in central bank thinking. I mean, they do think a lot of research about business cycles and what to do about them and how to respond. So that's not a new set of ideas. What's been going on in financial markets in the past 6 months is new, and so Mark's skill and talents in financial markets, knowledge about financial markets, is going to help. But I also think there are some longer term issues that he or any central bank governor starting today ought to be thinking about.
Well, let's come back to those. But Here's a very naive question from just an average Canadian who watches these things. How much control does someone like Mark Carney or the governor of the Bank of Canada have over the economy in these turbulent times? I mean, what can he do to influence the dollar? What can he do? Obviously, a lot about interest rates. Jim Stanford, what's the answer to that?
He has a lot of power. In fact, frankly, he's the most powerful economic player in the whole economy. He's clearly more important than the finance minister in terms of directing the day-to-day activities of the economy. He's got immense control over the level of interest rates. He's got immense control over the overall direction. Not to say that, you know, it's all a bunch of buttons that he pushes. He watches what the private sector is doing, what other economic stakeholders are doing, but his actions in terms of interest rates, in terms of the dollar, affect everything from job creation to inflation to our foreign trade performance. And I think one of the longer-term challenges that he's going to face, as Chris rightly pointed out, is the whole issue of the Canadian dollar and what's happened to it and how the rise in the dollar, the damage that that's doing to all kinds of industries, manufacturing chief among them, but others as well. How is he going to balance that against the traditional narrow-minded view that they're there to control inflation and nothing else?
And I just jump in and disagree at this
important
point.
Challenge there.
Well, I did say that there are some longer-term challenges, but I didn't say the longer-term challenge is the dealing with the Canadian dollar. I mean, the Canadian dollar, the meteoric increase in the Canadian dollar over the past 4 or 5 years, appreciating by about 60%, has clearly caused some pain, considerable pain in some parts of the economy, in particular the manufacturing sector in central Canada. And that is a genuine problem, but it is not, in my view and in the view of many economists, a problem that Mark Carney or the Bank of Canada can really deal with. Jim is right that Mark Carney and the Bank of Canada are very important because their job is to keep our, to maintain the value of our money and to make sure that money keeps its role as useful, being useful in terms of facilitating operations in the economy. But as important as the central bank is, they don't have, you know, the Bank of Canada does not have a whole bunch of policy levers. They basically have one policy lever, and that is very short-term interest rates.
Right.
And so it's very, very important what they do with that, but they can't, and this is, maybe Jim and I are going to disagree here, but let me give you my view, which I think is the mainstream economic view, and certainly the view held within the Bank of Canada, which is that if the Bank of Canada is going to focus on keeping inflation at or close to its 2% target, and the bank has done that very successfully over 15, 16 years, if they are going to maintain that focus on keeping inflation there, then they are going to let the Canadian dollar go where it goes.
Well,
and as world commodity prices have boomed by 90% in terms of Canadian export commodity prices over the past 5 years, and energy prices even more, then it is natural that is going to cause an appreciation of the Canadian dollar. And unfortunately, it is natural that is going to cause the sort of disruption that's being caused in the manufacturing sector. Now, I'm not suggesting that is not important. It is important, but as long as we are going to continue to use one currency across this country, and nobody is suggesting that Alberta and Newfoundland use different currencies or Ontario, as long as we are going to use one currency called the Canadian dollar, then the Bank of Canada must focus on the behavior in the overall economy, the aggregate economy.
Okay.
And so it's
one of the main theoretical critiques.
I
think Chris is right in explaining this is how the Bank of Canada feels. It is clearly how they feel. The bank is too comfortable in my mind with the dollar being at or near parity. They don't have a target for it, but it's clearly they've enunciated that high 90s is where they think it should be. And Jim Flaherty has said the same thing this week, and that I think is very worrisome. One of the main theoretical critiques in the economic literature of the inflation targeting regime that the bank has followed is precisely that it can result in unsustainable changes in the exchange rate. If all you're targeting is the domestic value of your money, as Chris has pointed out, then you don't know what's going to happen with the world value of your money,
right,
which is the exchange rate. And what's happening now, they talk about how stable inflation is going to lead to stable investment climate. But in the world that I live in, the investment climate is utterly unstable because the value of Canadian money and hence the level of Canadian costs has shot up by 60% in 5 years. And nobody has any idea where it's going to go next. Other central bankers, including the Americans, leave themselves some wiggle room, some room for judgment, an extra degree of freedom to set their interest rates to reflect the whole set of economic circumstances, not just the inflation rate. And I think the Bank of Canada is going to face that pressure more and more.
Let's move off the dollar for a minute and talk about interest rates. Chris Reagan, the U.S. Federal Reserve has made cuts to the interest rate to fight off a recession in that country. What do you think Carney will do to meet the challenges that Canada is facing from the situation in the U.S.?
Good question. First of all, the starting point is a little bit different. The Canadian economy, again, in aggregate terms, I'm not talking about just the manufacturing sector, but in aggregate terms, the Canadian economy is in a better position today than the U.S. economy is. Our employment growth has been very very strong over the past several years. Our unemployment rate is at a low point, certainly for 35 years. Our output by recent estimates, our national output, our GDP is 1% above what we call our productive capacity, and that is generating the wage pressures and the inflationary pressures that we're starting to see, wage pressures certainly across the country. So, number one, there's, I think, less of a reason for stimulating the economy through monetary action in Canada than there is in the United States. However, the U.S. economy is there, and it's very important to the Canadian economy, and if we see evidence that they are slowing down, as we're starting to see, then for that reason, there's going to be some pressure for lowering rates here. I think you will see us lower rates slower, more gradually than in the Fed than the Fed is doing in the United States, and I think that's probably justified. The problem with this is that as the gap opens up between the interest rates and that financial capital that tends to be footloose across international borders, as it moves away from the United States, where interest rates are low, and toward Canada, where interest rates are higher, that's going to strengthen the Canadian dollar. And that is going to, that type of strengthening of the Canadian dollar, which is caused by differential monetary policies, is going to slow down the Canadian economy.
All right,
So the bank's got to judge these two things.
That's exactly what happened this week, Maureen. The U.S. Fed cut its interest rate by a point and a quarter. We came in with a huge 25 basis point, quarter point cut, and the difference shot our dollar up by another 4 to 5 cents. So that's the exact problem I'm talking about, where if the Bank of Canada continues to just zero in on our inflation rate, even though our growth is not that strong, frankly, it's a bit of a myth. We love to pat ourselves on the back, but our economy has grown slower in real terms than the American economy has over the short-term period. Right now, the U.S. economy is in trouble, but over the 2 to 3 year period, we haven't been that great. So I think the bank has to, and Mark will be the one to guide this, start to interpret its inflation targeting mandate in a more broad and flexible manner, kind of like the Americans do. Hopefully that will allow us to stay out of the soup.
All right, gentlemen, I have to leave it there. Good conversation. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you very much,
Mark. Thank you.
Well, that's all we have for this podcast. You can listen to The Current weekday mornings on CBC Radio 1 right after the 8:30 news, as well as on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. To find out more about our program, visit cbc.ca/thecurrent. If you have any thoughts on what you're hearing on The Current, share them with us. Send us your comments. You can email us at thecurrent, all one word, thecurrent@cbc.ca. Our mailing address is Post Office Box 500, Station A, Toronto, M5W1E6. Or call us collect 1-877-287-7366. To subscribe to other great CBC Radio podcasts, check out cbc.ca/podcasting. Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.